This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, continuing a conversation with Joseph Tarigian, a research fellow at the Hoover Institution. His new book, The Party Interests Come First. The title is Mao Zedong's Opinion of Our Protagonist, Xi Zhongshun, the father of Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the People's Republic of China. It is fall of 1935, and here comes Mao and the Long Marchers. They've been wandering around without a sure destination. And Joseph tells me that Mao read about Shanxi province in a newspaper. Mao shows up, and where's our hero? Joseph, why was he detained at this point when Mao rode in with the Long Marchers? What had he done, Xi?
So this is certainly a dramatic moment in the life of Xi Zhongxun, the father of Xi Jinping. Xi Zhongxun was a revolutionary in the Northwest. But during this period, there was a lot of mistrust among the communists, and some of them thought they should be more ambitious and aggressive, and some of them thought they should be more careful and not get themselves killed. And normally this would just be a dispute among people with reasonable different of opinions, but in the Chinese Communist Party, it wasn't that simple. When you disagreed with someone, you accused them of ideological heresy, and you feared that they were doing something different from you because they were a traitor, because they were working for the enemy. So Xi Zhongxun is accused of being a rightist. He's thrown in jail. He thinks that he might be facing execution. At least that's the story that he told decades after. And then suddenly Mao and the other Long Marchers, who've been kicked out of Jiangxi in the south of China and have been marching throughout the entire country, thought they would have to flee all the way to the border with the Soviet Union, arrive in some dusty town and see a newspaper that says there's another Chinese communist base area. And when they investigate, they find Xi Zhongxun still under lock and key.
The legend and the fact is a very famous cowboy movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, who has a tagline that seems to apply perfectly to Joseph's presentation of these details. When fact replaces the legend, print the legend. The legend is Mao shows up and our hero, Xi, was about to be buried alive. And Mao intervened and saved him. And our hero, Xi, was forever grateful to Mao Zedong for intervening. What do we know of the facts, Joseph?
So it doesn't look like the executions were imminent. And the Chinese Communist Party members who led the purge until they died said that those executions were not going to happen and that they had already realized that something had gone wrong even before Mao arrived. And in fact, even after Mao arrived, he was primarily involved in military affairs. He didn't really directly manage the party. So he sent someone else to directly investigate. And that person was making the main decisions that led to Xi Zhongxun being freed. But, you know, what's also interesting here is that even though Xi Zhongxun and his associates were released from jail, if you looked at their party records, they were still accused of being rightist for several years after that. So there certainly wasn't a full rehabilitation. And in fact, Xi Zhongxun worked in backwaters, dangerous backwaters, for quite some time after that.
It's time to do politics, Joseph. We've avoided it as long as possible by telling human stories. Now we have to do, what did they mean by rightist? What did they mean by leftist? What the one, my favorite is mountainism. That's, I love that one. What is bureaucraticism? What is individualism? And at one point, somebody actually makes an accusation that I understood. I think the accusation was, how futile of you. Okay, let's start with right and left. What was that?
Yeah, so there has been a tension within the Chinese Communist Party from the very beginning. On the one hand, you had the radicals who wanted rapid transformation and wanted to achieve victories as quickly as possible. And that coexisted, of course, with a need to be practical and flexible and to understand the situation as the situation demanded. And these debates were complicated by ideology. And so when people argued, they would draw upon these texts, and they, especially for people who didn't really have a lot of practical knowledge, these fights could get really vicious. So you would use these isms, you would use these hats, as they call them in Chinese, to label your opponent. And so mountainism was this accusation against Xi Zhongxun that he just wanted to hide in the mountains and not fight revolution. And Xi Zhongxun later said, this is a ridiculous thing to accuse me of, because of course I didn't want to fight in the mountains. Fighting in the mountains means you have to climb up and down all day. But if we didn't fight in the mountains, we would have all been killed. When you call someone a leftist, it means they're too ambitious. When you call someone a rightist, it means that they don't take revolution seriously enough. And those accusations flew back and forth throughout the entire history of the party.
During the second, what we call the Second War, what can be called the Sino-Japanese War, Sino-Japanese War, Xi, our protagonist, and the communists mostly set out the war. In Shanxi province, and Yan'an became what the unofficial capital of the Chinese Communist Party. Were they under assault during the whole of the war or just at the end?
So during the war against the Japanese, the nationalists and the communists entered what was called the United Front. And so there was tension, there was some fighting, but most of the time, the nationalists and the communists weren't fighting a full-blown war against each other. And during this period, Xu Chongqing was in a very interesting place. For a few years, he was on the southern border of the communist base area, and then he was on the eastern border. So he was essentially guarding these sensitive parts of Yan'an that touched upon the nationalists, which meant that he was constantly trying to figure out which nationalists were trying to kill him, which nationalists might want to work with him, who could be won over, who needed to be destroyed. And it was this liminal, complicated environment that was very hard to manage.
Land reform. Well, that's a big one anytime revolution gets to it.
Absolutely.
The short version is it failed. What was the intention of land reform? Because again and again, they were always taking the land away from somebody who was doing well with it.
So there's this very interesting moment in 1948 that might not be common knowledge for some of your listeners, but the party was marching towards victory, and now they were looking at the countryside, and they wanted to reorganize society in a way that fit communist principles. But they were so ambitious and so aggressive and so radical that it led to starvation. And so there's this legend that Xu Chongqing was very brave, and he told the party that what they were doing was wrong, and he put his neck out, and he turned things around. But the real story is actually, I think, much more interesting, because it shows how dangerous it is to figure out when policies are going wrong and how to fix them in a system like the Chinese Communist Party. And in fact, it looks like Mao himself had reached the conclusion that things weren't going well. And once Xu Chongqing was aware that Mao was open, then he played an important role in fixing things. But it speaks also, again, to this dilemma of how, when you're going too fast and when you're going too slow, and who gets to decide.
This is the Northwest frontier, the Northwest province. You've told me that that's how the Chinese thought of it. And the Northwest was the strength of the Communist Party. It's striking to me, Joseph, how Red Guardism is anticipated in the poisoning of the teacher when he was in his teens. And the Great Leap Forward is anticipated here in the famine in Shanxi. It's social engineering. What's odd to me is that Mao and Xi both use the term Marxist-Leninism. What was that to them? What did they care about a European bookworm sitting in London penning document after document while the French are fighting the Germans in Paris? What did they care?
So Mao Zedong's story that he told about why he deserved to be the leader of the Chinese Communist Party is that he cynicized Marxism. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that in his view, you had these people who were trained in Moscow or were obeying orders from the Soviet Union who simply didn't understand what was going on in China. But that Mao, his contribution was to take the ideas of Marx and Lenin and apply them to China. And so that it means a lot of flexibility, because when you get to change things to fit your own situation, then you get to say essentially whatever that it means, whatever you want it to mean. So the ideology was important, right? Because you needed to tell people what they believed in, and you needed to legitimate this violence and this revolution. But for Mao, and one of the reasons that she respected Mao so much, you really also needed to have this this practical side. But then, as you said, in the 1950s, with the Great Leap Forward, they decided to leave the Soviet model. They thought that the Soviets had become revisionists, that they weren't really communists anymore. And that tragically led to the deaths of about 30 million Chinese citizens.
Joseph Turigian is the author, The Party's Interests Come First, The Life of Xi Zhongshun, Father of Xi Jinping. When we come back, victory and after. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.